So I'm here today with Jonathan Lazarson. Dr. Jonathan Lazarson is the head of AI research at DataGen and an early adopter of deep learning algorithms. He did his bachelor's and master's at the Technion, the Israel Institute of Technology, and earned his PhD from the Computer Science AI Lab at Stanford University. After a few years at Google, he ventured into the startup world and has become deeply involved in many practical applications of ML and deep learning. So most recently, prior to DataGen, at Zebra Medical, he led the development of two FDA-approved clinical products, applying neural networks to millions of medical images and unstructured textual reports. Thank you, Jonathan, for being here. And so it's amazing to have you here with us. And this is an exciting opportunity to get a chance to interview you after we've had a chance to work together for the past few months. So I'd love to maybe start off for our listeners a little bit about your background, how you ventured into this world of computer vision. Was it something that you were planning on from a very early age, or did you have some kind of epiphany and dive into computer vision along the way?
I think throughout my career, the things that I was working on, or that I'm working on, they chose me. I didn't choose them. During my PhD, I really hated computer vision, and I went away from it to something else. I started doing a project with a senior a PhD student of Daphne Koller, my advisor, and the project didn't go so well. And one of the other students of Daphne, a postdoc, he was doing something in computational biology, and what we did in vision was somehow relevant to what he did, and so he snatched me from that computer vision project, and I was very happy to try something else. So that was my beginning in vision, and the next time I got into vision was after Google in Point Grow. Didn't see myself as a vision person before deep learning. It's only when deep learning came along that I started the interest in vision, computer vision.
Super interesting. And did you plan this academic career originally, or did you dive from the academia to industry on purpose? Or
I don't think I actually had any very specific career planning in mind, and took this journey. Mostly the PhD was like an adventure that I wanted to get into, doing it in a different country and just continuing the academic track, which I really liked. I really liked my first and second degree in the Technion, and I just wanted to continue. I didn't want to start life yet. Most people have this dream of stop working basically when they're 30 or 40, basically retire when they're 30 or 40. So I did the next best thing, which is not to work until you're 30. So.
Very cool. And what was the experience like at Stanford, meeting new people, the different kind of culture than in Israel? Was it surprising for you in any way?
Definitely a lot of things were surprising. It was basically, an eye-opener, completely different world. It's a very strong experience. Also had a lot of lows, probably more lows than highs during the PhD, during the PhD period. It was very long for me. I switched advisor a couple of times.
Yeah, and just bringing us back to Israel and the startup scene. So you actually worked at Zebra Medical beforehand. So that experience, were you drawn there due to the medical aspect of it, or the computer vision challenges, or both? And what were the most challenging aspects of the development there?
Okay, so first what drew me to Zebra was a combination of two things. Probably the most important thing was the data. The gold mine of data that they had, no one else had at the time, which really sparked my imagination. The data they had was like millions of medical images and scans with reports from it, and just different opportunities there, which some of them I had the privilege to take advantage of. And so that was the main draw. And also the fact that the beginning of something, like it felt that they were building a really strong research group, and it was really exciting to join one. The main challenge was basically doing a product that satisfies the very high standards of the FDA, and crossing all the T's and dotting the I's of every little thing, and basically doing a very product-oriented research.
Yeah, well, we're going to dive deep into this on the podcast because I'm super interested to understand how well the FDA understands computer vision and how you guys went about this. And so if we want to segue over to DataGen, can you tell us a little bit about how you found DataGen and what made the decision, or what helped you make the decision to join DataGen as the head of AI research?
So I joined DataGen because I thought, because I think it's the right time and the right place for a revolution that's happening right now in the deep learning and graphics world. And that revolution is the revolution of photorealism and implicit representation, NeRF, SDFs, all that jazz. I was actually inspired first from work I did in Zebra Medical. We had this line of work going from 2D x-rays to 3D representation. And that was the first time where I actually looked around and saw that this amazing work going from 2D to 3D using this implicit representation of the world. And this is a completely radical difference from the classic graphics approach that uses all these weird data structures to represent objects like meshes and triangles and surfaces and normals and all that stuff. And I thought that I want to be in a place where I can be part of this movement, of this revolution. And then I looked around and I saw DataGen generating these amazing photorealistic synthetic data and doing it all using these classic tools. But DataGen wants this to be as photorealistic as possible. So I thought this would be a great place, like everyone is aligned, this would be a great place to basically jump and do this, you know, ready for this technical jump and this radical breakthrough between deep learning and computer graphics to make their data, our data, more photorealistic. So that was the place and that was the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we wanted to be, we wanted to work well, we wanted to be photorealistic, we want to render quickly, and there's a very strong business case for using neural implicit representations, definitely here. Completely agree with you. And I think that we're only scratching the surface. As you said, a lot of our tech is based on graphics today. So it could be all of the different tools from Unreal Engine to Unity to Blender to Maya. And using all of these amazing capabilities allows us to easily, or more easily, integrate with super talented 3D artists that are technical and that are able to create amazing 3D objects that are photorealistic, and then integrate them into our code and use generative methods to expand the types of items and to learn various patterns within the items. But at a high level, like you said, the way to really bring this vision three steps forward is by actually merging between the 3D information and neural networks, or representing the objects or the 3D world within neural networks. And you want to maybe touch a little bit on the kind of the advantages there, like why it's so groundbreaking?
Let's say current graphics represent objects as basically their own data structure. So each object in the scene is a data structure. We usually use a mesh, which is a synthetic way to describe an object. This is a real data structure that includes a lot of triangles built in a certain topology on top of each other. It's basically a very large polygon. And then you have a texture drawn on top of it. There's no representation of what's happening inside that particular object. And everything is basically broken down for you. And when you render this, it looks pretty good. We basically render rays that go through surfaces and so on.
Yeah, and it could look really amazing.
But there's still a small gap. It's not full way photorealistic when you're doing it like a whole scene. And I think one of the breakthroughs that make the next jump to photorealism is the new representations that don't... If you're going to the physical level, it's like you suddenly stop looking at surfaces and objects and you look at the atoms. They tell you what's happening in each X, Y, Z. There's no notion of a surface, there's no notion of an object, there's just XYZ and whatever is in that particular XYZ. And then you can do a lot of analysis on that space of XYZ, like the 3D space, to figure out where one object starts and another object. And if you think about it, this is how the real world works. This is how vision works. When we look at the scene in the real world, there's nothing there that tells us when one object starts and another one ends. And this is also what makes it more realistic, because all these distinctions between these objects, I think some of the aspects of photorealism, I think they come from the fact that we're looking at it in this atomic low-level presentation.
Yeah, there's no triangles in the real world. There's what's at least perceived, right, at our scale to be a continuous 3D space. And yeah, at a very low level, we understand that there are atoms, but there is a very strong differentiation between how it's represented in graphics today, which I think was mostly a design choice in order to optimize the 3D representation to be both visually appealing and also be able to be calculated within a reasonable amount of compute. So I think that's really why the design choice of the triangular the meshes and the various texture maps that are mapped on top of the meshes and how the ray tracing algorithms are even built, these are all very constrained by compute, and that constraint was, you know, set 20 years back or 30 years back by Pixar. It's not, and of course there's been a lot of progress, but this is, what you're talking about is a new approach, is a different approach to this challenge.
All the barriers are basically dropped. The distinction between where one object starts and another one ends, you can infer it by looking at the sample in your 3D space and realizing that the density is changing. Or you could see a video and you can figure out patterns of where there's some consistency, like a strong component that exists in one place but not the other. And this is how we do it in our computer vision in the brain. This is one of the reasons I find this very exciting. And there's new, basically, figuring out objects, foreground and background, it's coming. So right now, there's this whole field of implicit representation where we basically represent the 3D environment as a big neural network that gets an XYZ point in space and tells us the density there, the color there, the reflections there, and so on. But very soon it's going to be multiple neural networks that's going to be automatically figuring out the multiple objects in the scene. So we're entering a stage where the scene is going to be automatically decomposed into its components, which together basically bring us this whole implicit representation of what's happening in each XYZ. So we're going to start getting the benefits of the current classic computer vision tools where each object is defined as its own entity, together with this whole volumetric representation of the world. And the compute is ready now.
Definitely.
Not 20 years ago, but now we can handle it.
I think, yeah, there's a jump in the compute and also in this conceptual kind of understanding. And of course, there are a lot of non-trivial things that still need to be solved. But I think the moment that we can provide a good interaction between the technical 3D artists and this kind of new representation, as well as images, right? So these kind of three components, taking an image, turning it into a neural representation, or set of images, just turn it into a neural representation of a scene, and allow 3D artists to also go and manipulate it or go and add objects into that 3D scene. That's a very powerful tool. And I think that really, if you look at the gaming engines of today, which are all based on this mesh representation with the textures and all of that,
The triangles,
yeah. This is an old technology. And even though amazing projects like Omniverse that NVIDIA came out with and amazing kind of new capabilities in Unreal Engine 5, in the end, they're representing everything with triangles. And this type of representation is limited, right? It's limited by resolution. It's limited by the way that you can actually work with the objects in the scene and the transferability between real-world images, or a set of real-world images, and the assets themselves. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of work in this space, and there's a lot of very amazing research that is yet to be done to fully bridge this gap. But the future is, like, this technology is something that is so groundbreaking that there's not going to be really, there's no stopping it. It's just a matter of who's going to get there first and how good will it be in the near future.
Definitely, but it's great to be part of this movement, this revolution that's happening. And I feel it strongly. I feel it intuitively that it's happening, and I see it happening. And it's a feeling that I got in the beginning of the deep learning era where, you know, a lot of people were skeptic and did things the old way and didn't even let CNNs do computer vision for object classification. I was there, and I faced a lot of resistance sometimes.
Where was that, in Google?
No, it was after Google. Basically, only when they've seen the demo that people get convinced.
Definitely. The way to convince computer vision engineers is by showing them visuals.
Definitely. So I feel it strongly now, and we're seeing the results that are amazing, that have a very strong level of photorealism that was basically unprecedented before. And it's a radical change, this change from going from meshes to this 3D implicit representation. And basically it's a marriage between the compute power of neural networks and the rendering capability.
Wow, amazing. And so if you look at DataGen and think a few years forward, what is your high-level vision for the AI path that DataGen's going to be taking?
I think when people buy synthetic data sets from us in order to train their models, what they need two things. They need variability. They buy variability because they want to have a larger spectrum of people, places, objects that they currently have access to. So one of the things that we need to do is to increase the variability of assets that we have. And we can do it by either interpolating between assets, but also acquiring new assets, either a 3D artist identifying the assets and using basically building a model for it, which would take days. And if we can make that process faster using AI, basically, we still want it to be basically the highest possible quality. So that's going to be one of the things that we're going to focus on.
In the end, we always see that AI has some kind of human in the loop. And this will probably be true for the next 10 years at least. To have, and we see this in annotation, right? But you see this also in the person that actually decides what data they want to gather and how they want to annotate it. And this is prior knowledge. This is human knowledge that's inserted into these data sets that are constructed for the training of AI. Here, we want to empower our technical team, our technical 3D artists, empower the product team even to decide, like, we want to go into this domain. And then there are many ways to do it, but definitely we want to enable the technical artist to create one object or a set of objects and then multiply that with AI methods by the factor of 1,000 or 10,000 and to reach enormous variance that's representative of the real world with very little manual input.
Yeah, definitely we want to create this variety. And that's one way, that's one side of the package. The other side of the package is that our users, if they could just download a benchmark from the internet, they would have done so. They need something that is tailored to their specific scenario. So if someone wants to basically track objects in supermarkets or in a gas station or in a 7-Eleven, we need to be able to quickly generate this type of environment. And the only information that we could get would be basically to have our client, our user, take some maybe short video of their 7-Eleven or their gas station, and that would be the only information that we'll have in order to build this environment. So I think tools like NERF and Related would actually allow us to quickly pull in those real environments into virtual environments so that we can create synthetic data placed in the user's actual desired scenario. So that we'd be able to do these custom tailored environments really fast based on user input.
That would be amazing. That we obviously see that there's a very strong market for this. And it's not something that is fully solved today, right? This is a vision for a reason. We have the abilities to do this in specific scenarios, but in order to really grow DataGen to a massive level, this kind of technology will allow for a step function in our company's capabilities. And this is why we're investing so much in this type of research. And we're going to be growing the research team and expanding and bringing super talented people as yourself to lead this vision.
Definitely. And very looking forward to basically making a difference and discovering this technology.
And so these things are things that we're constantly learning, constantly trying to understand deeper. And it's incredibly interesting, I think. Do you see this as an iterative expansion of implicit representations? Or is there going to be some additional jumps, additional technological jumps in order to reach full understanding of video, audio, like the whole scene, the whole 3D world?
You're asking if it's going to be just a natural trajectory from what we have right now, like basically NERF going forward, or there's going to be something radical in order to do it? I don't know. But I think going forward on this trajectory, I can see still a lot of products in this trajectory who are using latent codes and stuff like that in order to get a scene from the real world and understand pattern, understand that there's some, let's say if you're seeing a video and you're seeing a certain object doing something in this video, I think we're going to be able to understand that this is an actual object, and perhaps we should allocate a neural network just to basically describe that object and whatever that object is doing. So I definitely see the 3D world automatically decompose into these parts where each is represented as a suitable neural network. And perhaps that neural network is going to actually be with prior knowledge. So for example, if we know that the world has chairs or cats or dogs, figuring out how to tune the dog neural network to this particular dog in this scene is going to be something that we're going to figure out soon. So we're going to have these pre-trained neural networks for all these types of objects. And when we see a new scene, we're going to need to figure out which is the best representation, which neural network we should assign to each object in the implicit representation of the world. Whether this is going to be enough for basically a full understanding of all the interactions between the objects, I would guess no. We'll need a little bit more.
Amazing. Very interesting. Thank you, Jonathan, for being with us today. And yeah, let's get to work.
My pleasure.